This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
We just wanted to give you a quick heads up before you listen to this week's episode of Over the Influence. During our chat with Sarah, there are references to drug use throughout. Sarah talks about domestic violence. There are references to severe mental health issues as well, suicide and drink driving. If you decide this episode isn't for you, we fully understand. Do join us again next week.
Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
I'm Danielle from Hertfordshire, and I'm nearly 10 months sober now. I was probably what you'd call a grey area drinker. I didn't drink all the time, but when I did, I didn't really have an off switch, and it just left me feeling low energy, low motivation, and just not really an optimal version of myself. I joined the OTI community after listening to the awesome Over the Influence podcast for quite a few months, and I've never looked back. There's Zoom calls every week on different days. You actually get to see Shaz and Ben, which is so exciting, and make that kind of community a reality and really come to life. I would highly, highly recommend joining the Over the Influence community. It was the game changer for me to feel connected in sobriety.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. It's fab to have you listening. My name is Sharon Hartley. I am based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. This summer, or at the end of this summer actually, September, I will be 6 years alcohol-free, 6 years sober, 6 years teetotal. However you want to label it, describe it, whatever. Quite a long time now without a sniff, and it's flipping brilliant. It's quite accidental to be at this point. And I say accidental because I never, ever, ever thought I'd be or wanted to be living a life where booze didn't feature. So I took a break to prove to everybody, including myself, that I did not have an issue. There was no problem. Took that 90-day break, which led me to go, oh, you know what? It's all right, this. It's going quite well. Right, we'll go a bit longer then. 6 months, 12 months, and here we are, banging on Over the Influence, week in, week out, about the absolute joys of sobriety. So that's me in a very lengthy nutshell. I drank too much, too quickly, too often. Ben, help me out. I seem to be getting into this really big hole now where I'm trying to keep it brief and failing as per usual.
Okay, well, I'll keep it brief. Hi, I'm Ben, 35, Liverpool, alcohol-free, 4 years next month. Bang!
Too brief.
I decided to remove alcohol for 3 months as a test. Got to three and went, ooh, this feels good. Let's do six. Got to six and went, oh, let's do 12, but no more than that. No more than 12. Got to 12 months and then went, right, not drinking is good for me. I'm going to keep going with this whole thing. And that was years ago now, which is nuts. Over the Influence happened. The podcast, the community grew from it. We've got people watching this call from South Carolina, Massachusetts. It's nuts, isn't it? That our community members are literally all over the world now. But we love it. You know, we love speaking to people from all over the world as well. But isn't it lovely that we've got a Northwest guest today,
Shaz? Our guest joins us.
Literally just down the road, yeah.
Literally up the road, yeah, yeah. Thank you, Ben. Yeah, it gives us great pleasure today to welcome Sarah O'Mara, who is from Lancashire last, to Over the Influence today. Sarah, thank you so much. How the heck are you doing?
You know what? I'm all right. I'm not too bad. I was a little bit nervous, I'm going to be honest. I was getting ready and I thought, oh my God, how many times can one person pee, you know, before a Zoom call? I was probably a little bit too much information, but I think the nerves were getting to me.
Is it because Sharon's on the radio where you live? Is that why?
I think that's what it is. I think, do you know what I mean? She comes across very busy and important, you see, so it's...
What a load of nonsense. I've never heard such tosh.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I like how you described yourselves there as being alcohol free. I often kind of say that I peaked early and then retired at a young age. Okay. You know, from drinking. All I can say is it's the best thing that I ever did in my life. Getting sober, 100%. You know, living the way I live now is, oh my God, is just absolutely light years ahead of and just different, you know, from anything I thought my life was going to be, you know, and sort of much better as well than anything I ever thought it was going to be. You know, it's like you say there, you know, you were saying, Sharon, it's, you know, you never thought you'd live a life alcohol free. You know, when somebody first talked to me about abstinence, I mean, first of all, it was a dirty word. Because I didn't trust people that didn't drink. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, why do we say that?
It's crazy. Isn't it? But I really did. And I actually think it was just because I thought those people are actually going to remember the things I did on a night out. You know, all those things that I really wanted to forget. I think that's probably why I didn't trust people that didn't drink. But yeah, that word abstinence seemed like a really dirty word. And the thought of never drinking again absolutely terrified me. You know, I thought, how am I going to do Christmas, birthdays, holidays? Do you know, how am I ever going to have any fun? You know, I can honestly say that, you know, some of the things that I've done things in recovery I never thought I would get to do. Do you know what I mean? Things that I used to plan at 5 o'clock in the morning in a kitchen with random strangers, you know, making plans, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, all of that, you know, great stuff, but that you never actually get around to doing. You know, I've actually done some of that stuff in my life today. And it's beautiful. Beautiful.
It's so good to hear. Go on, Ben. I know you want to jump
Shaz,
in.
Well, I just need to check. I mean, Sarah, before, because we've got some questions here ready to go. Do you need to wee?
No, I'm all right. More.
Okay.
You take a break anytime. You're amongst friends here. Yeah. And also somebody that knows exactly what you're going through. Although I've had surgery, so it's a little bit better. Sorry, Ben. Too much information.
Over to you, Shaz. I've asked what I needed to ask. Now it's time for a serious question from Sharon, the serious person on this podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Sarah, 4 years now, alcohol-free, which is incredible. And big up your bad self for that. It's just glorious to, you know, to see where you are now. And towards the end of the chat today, we want to talk about Red Rose Recovery and the fact that you are now helping other people who may have been, you know, who may be now where you were many, many years ago. It is fantastic. Take us back to when life wasn't so good to you tell the story.
Yeah,
Sarah.
Yeah.
And as much as you're happy to share.
Absolutely. So, you know, looking back at it now, you know, I can actually see traits in myself from being really, really young. You know, I never had great self-esteem. I've always been a little bit gobby. You know, you might be able to tell that, you know, just from talking to me a little bit. But it was all kind of a front. You know, I really struggled with that self-esteem and that kind of where did I fit into the world. It was, the way I can describe it is, you know, my viewpoint of myself was really very much based in what you thought about me. You know, any of the my self-worth, all of that was based in, you know, people must like me, people must love me. And I was always desperate for that kind of acceptance. And I think I really struggled with it. I always felt like I had to work a little bit harder than everybody else. You know, I first picked up drinking, you know, at a really young age. I did that kind of age-old thing of, you know, 11 years old in a bus shelter, you know, white lightning, Mad Dog 2020. Oh, yeah. Just the thought of it now, do you know what I mean? Absolutely. Oh, it's giving me shivers. You know, and I say I started that really, really young. And I think the difference was that once I put a drink inside me, it did something for me that it didn't seem to do for other people. You know, it gave me that confidence. Do you know, it was like a warm blanket. Do you know what I mean? It felt, it kind of felt like it gave me something that I wasn't able to do for myself, really. Now, I'm not saying I drank alcoholically straight away. I didn't, you know, but what I can say is from the first time I picked up a drink, I was thinking about it. Do you know what I mean? So my focus was always then on when am I going to do it again? Do you know, how am I going to get the money to, do you know what I mean? I'm collecting money from pocket money and here and there, and I'm, you know, for my dinner money, and I'm saving bits and here and there to make sure I had enough for the weekend. But I can't say I had a bad childhood or anything like that. You know, I think lots of people kind of assume sometimes that, you know, when we're alcoholics or addicts or, you know, we've had these things going on in our lives that, you know, we've had trauma as being young children. And that's not always the case. You know, I grew up with love, boundaries, you know, all of that beautiful stuff. I was not disadvantaged in any way. You know, I've got a great family. It was something in me. It genuinely was. You know, I'm quite old, so it's, you know what I mean? I did the 90s rave scene as well, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. You know, that introduced me to a whole different world. You know, with me, alcohol, you know, did bring on party drugs as well, I'll be honest. You know, my story, it starts with alcohol and it ends with alcohol, you know, and it was always the catalyst for other things. But, I did use, other substances alongside that. I think a big turning point for me was I met my husband when I was 20. You know, throughout that time, I say I'd still managed to do fairly well at school. I'm a qualified accountant. I could always get jobs. I didn't always keep them very well. You know, but I could always sort of style it out and, you know, get myself a job. I remember my husband, I said I was 20, he was quite a bit older than me. So he was 33 and he'd lived a different kind of life to me. You know, he'd been in jail before. He'd seen a bit more of the world. He was a bit more worldly wise, let's put it that way, than I was. And if I'm totally honest, I was besotted with him. You know, it's that sort of love that you only get when you're young and you're kind of, you know, untainted by the world. And it was an obsession, you know. Again, looking back at it now, I kind of see that for what it was. It was quite a toxic relationship, really. I think the power dynamic within that was very, you know, lopsided. You know, he had his own issues. And, it wasn't a healthy relationship, let's put it that way. You know, we were together for a long time. You know, we were very much in love. And as I say, very obsessive, very controlling, very kind of all in, you know, that sort of a thing. And, you know, it became the point where our relationship was very much based around a party lifestyle. You know, weekend drinking, weekend, you know, drug use. You know, we had a child as well. You know, I do have a son. And what started off as sort of weekend use, you know, but all of a sudden became, well, you're starting on a Thursday night, you know, and then you might be awake all the way till a Sunday. Do you know what I mean? It's not healthy. It's not, you know, when in a relationship that's already obsessive and not, you know, not the healthiest, doesn't kind of bode well. That kind of culminated, to be honest. So I say that, you know, it went on and on, and things kind of never got, things never do get better, do they? In those situations, you know, things always get worse. They don't get better. Things kind of really changed for me. I'm just coming up for 10 years ago now. So my husband at one point had what I know now to be a drug psychosis. So he was very ill, very, very ill. And then in the space of 3 weeks, he set fire to our house. He did do it intentionally, I think. We tried to say that he hadn't, but I think he did. I don't think he was in his right mind. I don't think he really knew what he was doing. He set fire to the house. I literally lost everything I owned in the world. I had the clothes I stood up in. And then he tried to beat me to death with a vodka bottle. I ran for my life. I was bleeding, you know, all the rest. He jumped in a car. He chased me in that car. It hit a pedestrian and that man died. You know, at that point, that gentleman was, he was a father. He was a grandfather. He was just walking his dog. Do you know what I mean? It was... tragic, really, really tragic. Wilson was subsequently arrested. And then 10 days later, he hung himself in his prison cell. So there I was. I was 33 years old. I was fairly traumatized. I had the clothes I stood up in, a fairly severe head injury. You know, I was living with the fact that another man died, you know, an innocent man died during all of this. And my husband was dead. You know, the only man I ever loved was gone. And I'll be honest, I did not know what to do with that. The grief, the shame, the pain, you know, all of it, I did not know what to do. I'd never dealt with emotions in the correct type of way. I hadn't. And so I went to the only thing that ever gave me an ease and comfort, and that was drinking. Like I say, that warm blanket, you know, for me, for a long time after that, it was my solution to the everyday. You know, those next few years after that, I genuinely became a woman I did not recognize. You know what I mean? The alcohol took over, the drugs took over. And if I'm honest, I was not a nice person during those years. I wasn't. You know, like I said, I did become somebody I did not recognize. I did things in those years that, you know, that I swore I never would. I put myself in very dangerous positions. You know, I'm lucky to be alive really today. I'm grateful that I'm alive today. I wouldn't have sold you that, you know what I mean, 9 years ago. I think back then I didn't really care whether I lived or died. I think that's the honest truth. And then, you know, for me, lockdown was a big changeover. Now, I know lots of people, and I'm sorry, I know I just go on like this and you're not getting a word in edgeways here, but I tend to do that. Lockdown was a massive thing for me. I know a lot of people struggled during lockdown. And for me, to start with, it brought me to my knees. absolutely did. I was furloughed from work. Yeah, I was no longer having to pretend. I wasn't having to put a front on it to the rest of the world anymore. You know, I wasn't having to pretend and go into work. I wasn't having to face anybody, you know, and my drinking did become kind of morning to night. You know, the only people that would come to my house were dealers. You know, I could get deliveries of alcohol. You know, those are the people that were still out and about, you know, during lockdown. I wasn't panicking that my mum was going to come and knock on the door and catch me, you know, any of that sort of stuff. Even though I was 33, you know, so I'm, well, 38 by then. Still concerned at what my mother thinks, obviously. Aren't we all? And genuinely, it brought me to my knees. It really, really did. You know, like I say, during that period, I really did become a woman I didn't recognise. You know, I wasn't a good employee. I wasn't a good daughter. I wasn't a good mum. You know, not anything. And I got really good at manipulating people as well. Really, really good at manipulating people, you know, in order to live the life that I wanted. I remember very distinctly my last kind of drinking bender. I think I'd been awake for about 4 days previously to this. And I'd obviously passed out at some point. I came around in my bedroom. You know, I was surrounded by empty bottles. I think there was 4 empty litres of vodka, 17 bottles of wine, 8 empty bags on the side. But I didn't know where I'd got it. I didn't know how I'd paid for it. I didn't know where I'd, you know, who I'd seen, who I owed money to. And I genuinely wanted to die. In that moment, do you know what I mean? There's no other way to put it. I genuinely wanted to die. What I see now was that actually that rock bottom, that was a blessing. It really, really was, because I had a choice. Either I laid down and died, because living how I was living was too painful. Yeah, I couldn't carry on. I couldn't look myself in the eye. I couldn't look in the mirror. You know, I couldn't do any of that. Or, you know, I was a mum and I felt like I didn't have the option to lay down and die. Do you know? I felt like that option had been taken away from me. And so the only option was to get help. And I did the kindest, best thing I've ever done for myself. And I reached out for help. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I had no idea about recovery. I didn't know anybody that was alcohol-free or drug-free. Do you know, I had no idea about any of that. And I went on good old Goggle, you know. I had a little bit of a goggle and got on Facebook. And I sent out a few messages. And somebody responded to me it was actually Narcotics Anonymous that got in touch with me first. It was a lad. And I still see this lad as well. I credit him with saving my life, that guy.
Oh,
honestly, he replied to me and he just said, it's okay, I've been there. You don't have to worry, you never have to be alone again. And he sent me a link to a Zoom meeting and he said, get on this. And I did. And that was the last night I've ever put a mood or mind-altering substance in my body. And here we are, 4 years down the line. I work a 12-step program personally, so it's not for everybody. You know, we're all different. There's lots of avenues to recovery. You know, so I do Alcoholics Anonymous, I do Narcotics Anonymous. I needed that structure that, you know, it was right for me. I say I work 12 steps. I've been through the steps twice. I have other sponsees now as well. I take other women through the work. 4 years down the line, I still do 3 meetings a week. I have to. I have to maintain my recovery. You know, it's the most important thing, because I can tell you right now, if I picked up a drink tomorrow, you wouldn't see me for 3 weeks. I'd tear my life down to the ground. I'd destroy everything that I've built. And today, do you know what? I've built a pretty nice life. I don't have all the, you know, fancy, shiny things. I've got a little bit of it. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, I'm sat in my own house and, you know, I've got a car on the driveway and I've got a job that I love. You know, I've got some of that. It's not about that. What I've genuinely got today, I've got peace in my heart. And honestly, that's the one thing I never thought I would get. And that's the one thing I've got today. And I owe it to recovery. Simple as that. I wouldn't be here today. I really wouldn't.
Your story is, oh my God, it's something else. Just talking about your heart there, as we're chatting, you've got a sign. I think you're in your kitchen. Begin each day with a grateful heart on that little plaque behind your head. How'd you come back from all that, from everything you've been through? You know, you've got the alcohol, you've got the drugs, you've got the trauma. You're a mum as well. You've got a child to think about. Where do you start, Sarah?
It's difficult. I won't tell anybody that recovery is easy, because it's not. It's really not. And I do believe, you know, that you have to get to a place where you've had enough. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not talking about the outside things, you know. It's not about, like, because I've been in a position where I literally had the clothes I stood up in. Do you know what I mean? It's not about what I've lost on the outside. It's about in here. You've got to get to a place where, as I say, living how you're living is too painful. And that's the place that I got to. And you don't do it by yourself. In my experience, yeah, you need the help of other people that get it as well. Other alcoholics, other addicts, people that aren't going to judge you. Yeah, people that understand. And people that don't want anything from you. Do you know, my sponsor, do you know, like I said, what saved me, yeah, was when I first got into that 12-step program, yeah, so I went on those first few meetings and I listened to another woman share. She shared her story in a meeting. And I knew her. I'd seshed with her years before. You know, she knew a lot of the same people I knew, you know, and I knew how she drank and used. And I was seeing the light in her eyes. You know, I saw that it was possible in that moment and that actually my life could be different because if she'd done it, I could do it. You know, and I reached out to her and I asked her to be my sponsor. And genuinely, that woman loved me until I could love myself. Honestly, she took me by the hand and she walked me through it. Do you know what I mean? I did not do this by myself. And I don't maintain it by myself either. I do it with a community of people. And for me, that's so, so important. One of the biggest things that recovery gave me was other strong women in my life. I didn't realise how important that was. I grew up in quite a male-dominated sort of, you know what I mean, environment. I've got 6 older brothers. You know, it was a lot of testosterone in my house. And I think growing up, you know, I think I saw other women as competition. You know, I think quite often women are pitted against each other, you know, in a lot of circumstances. And in recovery, you know, today I've got beautiful, strong women in my life. Do you know what I mean? That are just trying to live the life better, that have, you know, that have been through awful things in their life, but, are pushing forward. And it's seeing that in other people. Do you know what I mean? That's what inspires you. That's what pushes you forward. That's what tells you that it's possible. And it is possible. And don't get me wrong, I've had CBT therapy. Yeah, that helped me with the grief and the loss and the saying goodbye and all of that. You know, I work at 12 steps. Like I say, you know, it's a whole catalogue of things. It really is. But if you really want to do it, it's possible for anybody. I believe that. I really, truly believe that.
Sarah, I want to go back to one of the very first things that you said, where, you know, we've been doing this for a while now and we've met hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are removing alcohol from their lives for all sorts of different reasons. There are a few kind of common themes that come up when it comes to excessive drinking. We hear a lot that, you know, as character types, we're kind of all or nothing people, not just with alcohol, but with everything. Good things and bad things. You know, yes, it might be booze, it might be cigarettes, it might be doing really well at work, being a really great parent, you know, that all kind of all or nothing approach. We also hear a lot that, you know, it creeps up on you, substances, alcohol, you know, you don't quite realize just how much you're putting away until almost it's too late.
Yeah.
The other thing that we hear loads and loads and loads, and this is a thing that we don't hear explicitly, but kind of reading between the lines is a theme that just recurs over and over and over again, that so much excessive drinking or drug use or whatever is linked to low self-esteem.
100%.
Why?
I think for me, what I realise now and what, you know, my thought process is now, yeah, for me, I didn't have a drink or drug problem. I had a me problem. For me, I was trying to resolve something internal with something external. Mm. Yeah. That's the whole point. Alcohol and drugs was doing something for me that I felt I couldn't do for myself. Do you know what I mean? So some people, and I'm sure a lot of people, you know, go through that, you know, as children, you know, I'm sure we can link it back to, you know, it might be that, you know, my father was an alcoholic. You know, as I said, I didn't have a bad childhood. My mum is absolutely fabulous, you know, and she more than made up for any issues. I say we weren't disadvantaged in any way, but my father was an alcoholic. I think there's different schools of thought. Some people think, you know, that there are traits that carry through families. Do you know, for me, as I say, I think there was just something inside me that I just didn't sit well with myself. Do you know what I mean? Like I was that sort of person that I struggled to sit in and watch an entire film. You know, it's like they sort of say it's like discomfort, you know, sort of not quite comfortable in my own skin. And rather than finding a healthy solution for that, you know, probably couldn't verbalize that very well at a young age, you know, and tell somebody that's how I felt, you know, all of a sudden I had this thing presented to me, you know, alcohol. And when I put it inside my body, it was like, oh, okay. This is the missing bit. This is, do you know what I mean? This is what's going to support me through, you know, all of those feelings.
I'm just thinking kind of younger generations. You know, is it that they are more, because we hear a lot about the fact, I don't know about your 19-year-old, but we've got a 16-year-old in the house who recently finished his GCSEs, and me and my brother were reflecting at the weekend what we did after we finished our GCSEs, which was go out and get absolutely smashed in town at the age of 16.
Yeah.
You know, Alfie was like, oh yeah, we went for some food, and then I've come back to play on my PS5. Like, you know... Like I want to come and see my little brother. We're like, oh, God, you're the best kid ever. But I, you know, it does feel like, Shaz, you talk about your kids in terms of they're in their early 20s and they're not putting them away like you would have done at the same age.
Mm.
Is it gone?
No, and I think with that, I think it's twofold. I think that it is changing and they've got better stuff to be doing. But I also think it's no coincidence at all that since I removed alcohol, that's had an effect on them.
The point I'm coming around to is I think that actually, you know, kids these days do feel a bit more like, is it partly to do with this kind of, we talk about our mental health now, you know, you saying that you didn't talk about how you were feeling about stuff, whereas actually it's in our culture to talk and open up. And, you know, yes, for maybe men of a certain age, men of my generation still kind of find it a bit tougher to talk about how they feel, but not the kids, not the teenagers. You know, it's not cool to tell everyone how you feel, but it's accepted. It's out there. It's, you know, maybe that is, you know, because we're always looking. What's that thing? You know, you said earlier that you have to get fed up of it completely. My favourite phrase is that we've got to stop pulling people out the river, go upstream and find out why they're falling in. Desmond Tutu. And I want to encourage people to stop before they get to that point where they're fed up of it. They can't take any more of it. I want people to look and go, a bit like I did, right, actually, this is the way it's going. And nip it in the bud before it gets kind of past the point of no return. And I think part of that is working out, why do we drink? And I think what you've said there is really interesting, that it is the self-esteem part of it, but it's the easy solution.
Yeah, 100%. I think as well, for me personally, and I can only speak for me, you know, I've only got my own experience. You know, I used a lot of, you know, situations. Obviously, you know, I've had really traumatic experiences in my life, you know, things that I didn't deserve that weren't my fault, you know, like that's taken, you know, yeah, that's fact. That's not why I'm an alcoholic and that's not why I was an addict, you know, but I definitely used that as an excuse for a long, long time. I was very selfish. I was very self-centered and I absolutely thought I brought everything back to me. Do you know what I mean? I was so focused inward on, you know what I mean, how I felt about situations, you know, really uncomfortable in the world. It was all about, rather than what I try to do now is focus out a little bit more, you know, because I'm still an addict. Do you know, I'm still an alcoholic. Do you know what I mean? I still have these traits in me, but I have to manage them a different way. So now if I start to feel self-conscious and I start to feel, my go-to now is, how can I help somebody else? Do you know what I mean? I have to try and focus that out onto the world. This thing here with, you know, starting with a grateful heart, I have to find what I'm grateful for every single night. You know, so every night before I go to bed, I do what they call an inventory. So I ask myself certain questions. Yeah. So number one is, have I been resentful today? Yeah. And then what's my part in it? Because for me, it's those resentments and those little things that start to eat away at me. Do you know what I mean? Those things that I'm not saying out loud. Do you know what I mean? Those things that I'm keeping inside, that for me, that's where addiction breeds. It's in the dark. Yeah. So I look at what, you know, what am I resentful for? Who am I hating on today? But what's my part in it? Yeah. what did I do? What's, do you know what I mean? What can I change in that situation? Because people, places and things, what other people do is none of my business. I've got to think about, do you know, how I fit into this world. Have I been selfish? Have I been dishonest? Have I kept something to myself? No, that I've,
God, that's, this yeah. is tough, because I'll lie there and I'll go, did I take the bins yeah. out? Have I done my lunch for tomorrow? Because yeah. the kids got their lunches for tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that's some heavy, honestly, some heavy questions.
Every night, and I write it down. It gets written down. Yeah. I've asked myself these questions. Yeah. And then, have I helped somebody else today? Yeah. Have I lived in fear? Do you know what I mean? What's been my overall feeling today? And then I write a gratitude list.
Wow.
And then in the morning, I read my gratitude list, because I don't open my eyes generally and feel grateful. Do you know what I mean? That's not my go-to emotion. My self-pity, I love a bit of self-pity. I love to, you know, to wallow in that. Do you know what I mean? And my disease, my, you know, whether you want to call alcoholism an addiction, a disease, you know, however you want to view it, it loves that. Do you know what I mean? And it will breed on that. So I read through my gratitude list and I remember that I've got something to be grateful for. Do you know, and I try and go out in the world and, do you know what I mean? And live better each day. I've got to. If I'm not moving forward, I'm do you know what I mean? I'm going backwards.
Just going back, Sarah, to the inventory list. And how hard is that? Because it requires a phenomenal amount of honesty.
Absolutely. And don't get me wrong, I am not a perfect recovering alcoholic or addict here, right? I do not get this right all the time.
Yeah, but you're doing a pretty good job so far.
This is what I aim to do every night. Do I manage to do it every night? No, of course I don't. Yeah. Do I fall asleep some nights? Yeah, am I really pissed off some nights? And I think I'm not, do you know what I mean? I decide recover shit, I hate everybody, you know, I'm not going to do it. Of course I do. What happens is I put myself in a place of pain. I wake up in the morning and I feel like crap. I don't want to get up. I don't want to, do you know what I mean? And then I think, what am I not doing? Okay, do you know what I mean? And I get myself back on track. So I do not get this right all of the time. Absolutely not. But it's taken me this long to realize, you know, and to work out actually what works for me. And if I want to live happy and peaceful and free, if I want to have that serenity, then it's conditional on me doing a few, you know what I mean, a few suggested things basically in my life. And however hard it is, it's not as hard as I was living before. If I think to myself, right, would I have spent 15 minutes a night, yeah, writing some things down to get a dealer to drop off to me, or to get the shop to open up? Do you know what I mean? When I wanted another drink, yeah, I would. There's nothing I wouldn't have done. So I've got to put the same effort into saving my life. It's as simple as that.
Something else that comes up a lot through these conversations, you know, I'm not. We're all, of course, unique and beautiful and special in our own ways, Sarah.
Yes.
But it's that whole self-awareness thing, the importance of self-awareness. And actually what you've just said there is kind of painfully self-aware. You know, I love a bit of self-pity, me. Like, to say that out loud, say that to two people that you've, I know you've met Shaz before because you only live down the road.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've only just met, and also thousands of people will be listening to this. To say that, you know, I love a bit of self-pity, me. You know, that the level of honesty that requires must be tough,
honestly.
But you're saying it's necessary, because then you by having that awareness, you can then take positive action.
Absolutely. For me, I cannot live sober and I cannot live this life without honesty. And it's honestly, it's because I lived so dishonestly for such a long time, and that's what kept me sick. It really is. You know, telling all of those lies, lie on top of lie, you know, because whether it be because I'm hiding alcohol in my house or in the boot of my car, or, you know, all of these lies that we tell us other people. But the biggest lies I ever told were to myself. I believed my own bullshit. Do you know what I mean? It was like, oh, poor me. If you'd had my life, you'd be drunk too. Do you know what I mean? I deserve this. Do you know what I mean? And it was all a justification to carry on living how I was living. And like I say, if I want the life that I've got today, it's that age old thing, isn't it? If you keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same outcome. Do you know what I mean? If nothing changes, nothing changes. So, yeah, I've got to start living an honest life. And I say, is it easy? Nope. Absolutely not. Do I like it? No, I don't. So I remember first coming to recovery and somebody saying to me, do you know, like if you do AA or NA, yeah, people ask you to find a God of your own understanding, right? People think it's religious, not religious. They want you to be spiritual in some way. All it is to realize that you're not the center of the universe. There's something bigger out there than you working. Do you know? When somebody told me I wasn't the center of the universe, I was like, how dare you? What do you mean I am not the center?
Me, myself, and I.
Like, you know, when somebody started pointing out this stuff to me, that, you know, all these things that I was crying about, and, you know, and this has happened, and they're like, okay, well, we've heard about you. Do you know what I mean? What about the rest of the world? You know, it was a shock to the system. But ultimately, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to live that way. So, you know, it's about actively changing, isn't it? Putting that effort into it.
I mean, the change is phenomenal. Like, I mean, and it's, I say, I don't mean only, but, you know, when you talk about lockdown, it feels like it's only 5 minutes ago, lockdown. It's 4 years ago, isn't it? But in the grand scale of your life and things that you've shared with us, that's a relatively short amount of time, isn't it? Compare it to everything else that you've been through. And yet the changes are so spectacularly vast. How important is it for you now to give back and to reach back and to help others where, you know, they may be in the absolute pits of despair?
Huge, absolutely huge. So, as I say, for me, I would not be here without the help of other people. I wouldn't, you know, when I said that before, that, you know, another woman took me by my hat, you know, by the hand and loved me till I could love myself. That's genuine. That's 100%. That woman saved my life. There's no two ways about it. And that's how recovery works. Yeah. She was a few years in, she was a few years ahead of me. And if she'd have been the one to go, oh, do you know what? I'm feeling better now. I'm feeling all right. I'm just going to go and live my life. I'd have never got it. So it's a responsibility, really. Somebody gave it to me freely. It's my responsibility to get, that's how I feel. It's my responsibility to give it, you know, to freely to somebody else. You know, and I try and do that through working a program. But I also, like I say, get to do this through, you know, through my job. And I love my job. I do think as well, one of the biggest things that I needed was purpose. Do you know what I mean? Something, you know, something to love, something to, you know, get my teeth into that, you know, because as I say, I'm a qualified accountant, but counting other people's money for a living is soul destroying. Like, genuinely. Sorry to if any accountants are listening, you know, but for me.
my son has just done his final exam, actually, the eldest, to become
to be
a fully
fair,
qualified
we've destroyed
accountant.
His soul recently with James. What does this mean? James, what does that mean? James, now that you know how to do this, can you tell us how to do this? James. He's like, fuck you now.
He was, yeah. He was enjoying accountancy until he got involved in OTI. Yeah, yeah.
Honestly.
He loves counting other people's money.
Go for it. If you can do it, I support it. But for me, my God, no, just absolutely soul destroying. And do you know what? As I say, I work for Red Rose now, and the job came up. I'd gone down to 3 days. I was still working from home. I was furloughed still. You know, I think I was 11 months clean and sober, and I'd seen this job for two day job, and it was a community engager. It was a real entry level job, you know. It was less money than I was already making, and it was, you know, setting up community groups, and you know what I mean. It is what it says on the tin, community engager, you know, going out and you know, and supporting other people. And I thought, well, you know, could I do it? Do I think I could? And I thought, you know, I'm just going to go for the interview. And they offered me the job, and I, you know, so I did that alongside, you know, being an accountant for a little while, and I loved it. I genuinely loved it, you know, being in the middle of people, you know, in my community, because I genuinely feel like the recovery community is my community. Do you know what I mean? It's the one place now that I feel at home. Do you know what I mean? I'm not judged. I feel like I can be myself. I can just let it all, you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I remember my boss saying to me, you know, I think you're quite good at this, Sarah. Do you know, what do you want to do? I said, I want to work full time. And so they offered me a full-time job, and I took it. And then he said, what do you want next? I said, I want my boss's job. I want to be team leader. And they made me team leader. And I said, they said, what do you want next? I said, I want more staff. Let's, do you know what I mean? Let's build this a little bit, you know. And from that now, I work in the Lancaster office. I've got 13 staff. We've got 5 different contracts. We've got a hub that people can drop in and out of in the day. And for our organisation, I'm the drug and alcohol contract lead for Lancashire. Me. Honestly, it's mental. Sometimes I sit in meetings and I can be sat there, right, and I'll have a police commissioner on one side, like the head of the council or something on this side, you know, somebody dead high up in the NHS. And they'll ask my opinion, and I just think, I'm just an Alfie from Lancaster.
Now we're going to ask the drug and alcohol lead what they think. You're sitting there going, when are they going to... Oh, shit, it's me.
It's me. It's me. Just an alky from Lancaster. That's the best title ever. Bloody love it, Sarah. But
Sarah,
just... Oh,
oh,
go on, Ben. No, we all want to jump in there.
I was going to say, because obviously, you know, that is... You started off by saying that you had really low self-esteem, really low self-worth. Where are you with that now? How is your self-esteem these days? How is that self-worth?
Do you know what? It's work in progress. Some days I wake up and I think, yeah, I can do this. Some days it's less so, you know. Do I like myself today? Yeah, I think I can honestly say that I like who I am today, you know. Can I say I love myself today? Some days, yes. Some days, no. You know, it's still a work in progress. You know, I've got lots of beautiful things in my life, but there are still things that I struggle with. Of course I do. You know, relationships, you know, whether that be friendships or romantic relationships, do you know what I mean? Those things can still be a struggle for me. Of course they can, you know, but today, as I say, I've learned to be verbal about it. I've learned to have a community of people that I trust, you know, and that I can talk to, that I can be honest with, and that helps. Yeah, so it's an ongoing process. Ask me again in 5 years. Maybe.
Come back, absolutely.
I'll love myself today.
Now we're going to ask the drug and alcohol lead for the world what they think. Well, who's... Oh, shit! It's me!
Sarah.
5 years
Sarah
later.
Alky from Lancaster. I'm just really conscious of time. We've probably got about 5 minutes or so left. I just want to touch on as well, you've referred to this throughout our chat, which is fantastic, about the importance of connection, the importance of community. We've got our own online community over the influence, and within that, there are people from one end of the drinking scale to the other. And, you know, we always make the point of saying we are not a recovery program, but so many people tell us that we are part of their recovery program, however that might look. And, you know, through our experience, this community has been running now for 3 years. It doesn't matter what sort of drinker you are. It doesn't matter your background. Mm. When I use the term nobody cares, people care deeply. That's the actual thing. But there's no judgment is what I'm saying. Once you've found your people, your tribe, your weirdos, whoever they might be, that so often it's the missing piece of the jigsaw, isn't it? It's vital.
Yeah, 100% agree. Do you know, I think for so much of my life, I could feel lonely in a crowded room. Do you know what I mean? It's for anybody, you know, to be sat there and feel like they're slightly misunderstood and they don't quite fit in, you know, even though on the outside you might be projecting all of this, you know, you can be outgoing and all of these things. Nobody really knows what's going on inside. And I think it's difficult for a lot of people, you know, and it's such a freeing experience to be able to sit in a community and just like, you know, just be able
and breathe. Shoulders down.
Yeah, and it's like the weight of the world is just sort of lifted off you, and it's like you say, your weirdness is accepted. Do you know, like that? I've still got a head that's out to get me. Do you know what I mean? Like I still have really intrusive thoughts, do you know, and now I work in a space as well, do you know, and I have a community of people where I can just blurt that stuff out. People just laugh. Well, I think people, you know, outside might want to section me, but yeah, the community sort of gets me.
we're nodding along there going, we get that. Yeah. It's really funny the amount of messages we get and emails going, what's it like join the community, and I'm like, it's fine, it's literally fine. You are going to be blown away by the amount of people just like you, and equally I am never not fascinated by the connections that are made from, you know, such a vast spectrum of people, but we've all got one thing in common, which I absolutely adore.
It's weird, isn't it, because you think, like, I remember, being sat thinking, you think you're the only one. You're the only one that thinks like you and feels like you do. And then when you hear somebody else say it out loud, it's like, oh, my God, it's not just me. You know, perhaps I'm not that weird. Or if I am that weird, it's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a final question to ask you, and you don't have to answer it, but I think you probably will. when you described your rock bottom, when you shared with us what it was like that final day of taking drugs and drinking, and you came round and there's 18 wine bottles and God knows how many vodka bottles. If you could talk to yourself now, if you could just talk to that woman now, what would you say to her while she's in that absolute pit of despair?
I think more than anything, I'd want to put my arms around myself and tell me it was going to be okay. Because I think I've never, ever felt quite so frightened and alone, you know. And I think all of the bravado in that moment was stripped away, you know, and what was left was genuinely just a frightened little girl. And I think, just more than anything, I just want to be able to give her a hug and say, it's all right. It's going to be okay. It's scary and it's frightening, but, you know, make the change. Make the change. Put your faith in yourself and things will be okay. Yeah.
Love that. Sarah, thank you. Before you go as well, please can you just give Red Rose Recovery a good old plug? I know that they're obviously Lancashire-based, but if anybody wants further information about what they do, cracking organisation, just tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So Red Rose Recovery, it's my favourite topic, this. Red Rose, I say we are a lived experience organisation. So by that, what it means is 98% of the workforce have a lived experience of drugs, alcohol, domestic violence, homelessness, criminality, you know, all of that. You won't be judged in there. You know, nobody cares what you've done. Nobody cares what you've come from. All we care about is what you want to do about your problem and how we can help you. We have, groups that run every day. You know, they can be structured, unstructured, everything from, you know, behaviour change programmes to Pilates. Do you know, women's only groups, men's only groups. We have a camping weekend coming up. Recovery is not boring. I did not get into recovery to be miserable. I got in it to change my life. And that's what we try and help people to do in Red Rose. www.redroserecovery.org.uk. You can find out everything that we do on there. Check out the Lancashire User Forum as well. I've got you can feel the 100% cotton of this T-shirt, can't you?
Look at that quality, that T-shirt. I can see it.
Lancashire User Forum, bit of a plug there as well. The biggest service user-led forum in the country. That's set up. It's not Red Rose that owns that. It's owned by the community. That's because we think that people that use services should have a say in how those services are run and how those services are made and paid for and, you know, where that money goes and all that good stuff. So get onto the website, Facebook. You know, we're all over that stuff and get connected. Drop into the Lancaster office. Come and see me. You know, I usually have...
Team leader.
Hey, big boss lady in there. I'll get the good biscuits out if anybody's coming.
Excellent. There you go. Biscuits and a brew. Yeah. You can't beat it. Sarah O'Mara from Lancaster, thank you for joining us on this week's episode of the podcast. It's been fantastic. Thank you so much.
Been a pleasure. Thank you, guys.